Well, I'm back after about a week or so under the weather, under the effects of COVID. After 2 years, in fact, a little bit over 2 years, it finally caught up to me and it took hold of my chest a little bit and especially my throat, as you might be able to tell. But it looks like the worst is over with, so we're ready to get back into action. Welcome to episode 16 of Spanish History 101, brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. This episode covers the Emirate of Cordoba. Now, when we talk about this period in history, we often focus mainly on the commonly known or the famous Christian kingdoms and their development without always considering what the Arabs or the Berbers and the other Muslims were doing at this time. For about the same time that the Kingdom of Asturias rose and fell, so too lasted the Emirate of Cordoba from about 756 to 928. An emirate is a territory under the leadership of an emir, which is sometimes translated as prince, but it can also be just a military leader or a high-ranking governor. The dynasty at this point was the Umayyad House, which was originally based in Damascus and was for a few years there one of the most powerful families in the world. And their empire came to be one of the largest in history in terms of area. It didn't last very long, all things considered, less than 90 years, but it certainly had an impact, especially on Spanish history. Now, the Umayyads' rivals, the Abbasids, that clan sort of came in and took over. They would boot the Umayyads from power, killing most of them, and then they moved their capital to Baghdad. Now, one of the few survivors of the Umayyad family was a man named Abd al-Rahman, who made his way over to Muslim Spain, which we know was called Al-Andalus, and sort of brought things under control there. He would eventually create the Emirate of Cordoba in 756, which ironically would be a religious affiliate to the new caliphate of the Abbasids that is ruled by the very same family that all but exterminated his. On the other hand, as a government, as a political government, though, Cordoba remained essentially independent, and the Emirate acted as a kind of Umayyad territory or government in exile. Abd al-Rahman certainly had his work cut out for him when he got started. The Muslims in Spain were anything but a united bunch. All sorts of feuding and infighting between the Arabs and the Bedouins, the different tribes and clans made cohesion very difficult to achieve. But he did this, and he did it mainly by hiring mercenaries as an army, about 40,000 troops in all. They would be loyal solely to him and his money, and that would be what he would use to pay them for their services, and that meant that they generally had little interest in anything else. Abd al-Rahman managed, after lots of struggling with the different groups, to control the general territory. But he wasn't always focused just on fighting. He also began to create Cordoba as a major capital, and not just in Muslim Spain, but in the Islamic world in general, and even Europe. And one of the most significant buildings would be at least the initiating of the construction of the Great Mosque of Cordoba, one of the most incredible buildings in Spain. After he died, two more emirs took over. One was named Hisham the First, and the other one was Alkahan the First. The former reigned for a fairly brief but peaceful 8 years, and then the latter, on the other hand, earned a reputation for being one of the strictest, the severest, the cruelest of all the entire Umayyad dynasty. One example of his bloody and cruel behavior was the famous Night of the Pit or the Ditch, which took place in Toledo. That is when he invited 400 influential people from the region to the city of Toledo for a banquet, which is always one of the best ways to lure a Spaniard to your house to offer a nice big meal. Anyway, once they arrived in the town or at the city, his men had them beheaded. It was certainly a grisly event. Alcahen's tough stance meant he initially faced resistance in the form of uprisings from all over the country, and not just opposition from the Christians up north, but he was a tough guy, and he basically suppressed all of them. He also apparently had a weakness for wine, which was strictly forbidden according to the rules of Islam, so he liked to have things both ways. The emirate was a place of constant turmoil, and it only sort of got worse. All of this infrastructure and organization had two drawbacks. One was that the different groups that belonged to that territory did not fancy big government. And the second was that the leaders resorted to what leaders all over the world do when they need to finance their projects. They raised funds either by tributes paid by Christian kingdoms in exchange for peaceful existence. Yes, that's just another way of saying extortion. And the other was by levying taxes, usually on the poorest sectors of society. This led to a couple of reactions. One was the massive conversion of many Christians to Islam, because if you were Muslim, you paid less or none at all. And the other was armed rebellion. We already saw what happened in Toledo, but that wasn't the end of it. In 818, for example, in Cordoba, another revolt ended in a bloody clash. In 822, Alcahen died, and he was succeeded by another ruler named Abd al-Rahman II. He rose to power, and many consider him to be sort of the true organizer of the emirate. He also had his hands full during the reign and devoted much of his time to combating Alfonso II of Asturias. This time his internal situation was more under control, but now he had to take on the Christian kingdoms from the north. The Asturians had been pushing southward, but Al-Rahman II managed to bring that to a halt. In addition, he had to take on some unsuspecting rivals or opponents like the Vikings in 844, who actually managed to get all the way up to Seville and sack the city, though the Muslims were able to get their own back and beat them in a battle called Taljata. Abdullah Rahman II was also a great intellectual, and he fostered the sciences and the arts. He continued to work on the Mosque of Cordoba and founded one of the most important libraries in Muslim Spain. He died in 852. He was succeeded by Muhammad I, and with his arrival, as well as with the following leaders, the emirate sort of entered into a phase of crisis, a series of crises, in fact, that would last for decades. In fact, many, many decades, practically to the end of the emirate. Things basically just fell apart. It's almost unfathomable to imagine how complex, how confusing, how messed up this situation gets. There are so many factions, so many rivalries, so much infighting that it seems nearly impossible to get anything done. Even within the same family, there are people constantly attacking each other, betraying each other, fratricide, parricide, you name it. This was something that we've seen happen over and over again in sort of Spanish history during the Roman period, the Germanic tribes, the Kingdom of Asturias, León and Navarra, and now Al-Andalus. And we will see this happen over and over again as we head deeper into the Reconquista period. But anyway, for the most part, none of the fighting had to do with the Christians up north, but rather from groups within the emirate. You had your Muladíes, or the Muyalads, who were native-born people, Christians in many cases, who had converted to Islam. They could have been former Visigoths, or maybe what they called Hispano-Romans. But anyway, they often converted to Islam. Many families expanded into extended clans and controlled whole regions. The most famous is without a doubt a family known as the Banu Qasi, who dominated the area around what would today be Zaragoza and La Rioja. And then there was a member of Muhammad's one family who broke away in the west. And so the city of Badajoz and the region surrounding that actually became independent, completely separate, freed from the emirate for several years there. And then back in Toledo, once again, the local Christians, known as the Mozarabes, rose up against the authority. And they did this with the help of the kingdom of Asturias. Anyway, things get pretty ugly there. After Muhammad, you get his son, Al-Mundir of Cordoba, and he reigned for just 2 years before suddenly dying in 888. Then his brother-in-law, Abdullah of Cordoba, takes over for the next 25 years or so until 912. He was a little bit more reserved as an individual. Abdullah's biggest problem was a rebellion led by another Muslim named Omar ben Hafsun. He's a Muslim of uncertain origin who challenged the emirs for decades. And there was just no stopping him. He sort of based himself in a place called Borbastro, and there was not much anyone could do about it. Ben Hafsun would be a thorn in the emirate side throughout some 40 years. Abdullah died in 912. His son, who was supposed to succeed him, was killed by one of Abdullah's brothers, who was obviously thinking of taking over himself. So Abdullah's father, who was still alive, had the murderer, that is his own son, executed. Then he named the son of his killed son, that is his grandson, the new emir. At this point, it shouldn't surprise anyone when we talk about how confusing Spanish history can be, sort of how messy it can get. And plus, it should help you to understand how slow progress could be during these centuries. People were literally, literally backstabbing each other all the time. In any event, the new emir would be the last one of the emirate, and that's because it would disappear during his reign. His name was Abdul al-Rahman III, and he would turn the emirate into a caliphate, which was a higher status, sort of a kingdom now. And it made Cordoba both politically and religiously independent of the caliphate of Baghdad. We are now reaching what many consider to be the golden age of Muslim Spain, or Al-Andalus. And because this individual has so much to say for himself, we'll have to focus on him at a later time when we discuss the Caliphate of Cordoba. Now, of course, not everything was chaos or conflict during those 180 years. Muslim Spain was getting somewhat more organized, infrastructure improved, as did the government setup, things like taxing and financing evolved. Culturally, the arts and medicine thrived, as well as important technological advances in irrigation and the storing of water, something that is very important in many parts of Spain. Muslim architecture continued to spread, and the religion of Islam itself grew in popularity, even among the Christian communities. Now, as I mentioned before, part of this had to do with the tax advantages afforded to the faithful of Islam. So there was sort of a tax haven that acted as an incentive for converting. But there were also locals who simply converted because they wanted to. In fact, one of the causes of alarm among the Mozarabes, that is the Christians living in Al-Andalus, in the area of Cordoba around the year 850, was the number of people who were leaving or abandoning God for Allah. So a group of them began to defiantly insult Islam, Muhammad, and Allah in a blatant attempt to get executed and thus become a martyr. Some 48 individuals chose that route, and many were beheaded. Today they are known as the Martyrs of Cordoba. In any event, tolerance, intolerance, acceptance, and clashes between the two religious groups, in fact three if we include the Jews, will be the topic of conversation in a number of future episodes, so stay tuned. But anyway, we'll stop there. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spaindemain. Please feel free to leave us any comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, Apple, and Castos. If you wish to support Brian Spaindemain, click on our PayPal donate button, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts, you can check us out at Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.